Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of March, recording at 4:58 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. Stock markets were generally firm, and some of them really very firm. A number of new highs in among European indices, for instance. Also, India edging further into new high ground. A little evidence of weariness towards the end of the week, however. But maybe that's only a consolidation. And in government bonds, we have seen a technical rally this week, but that is fading in here today, certainly as far as the European fixed interest sector is concerned, and we really never had a rally on the JGBs. It was mainly the US Treasuries. Elsewhere, as far as the US dollar was concerned, clear weakness this week. And that's continued today, particularly against the Japanese yen. It hadn't moved as much against the Japanese yen until it started to fall yesterday. And in metal markets, general firmness and some quite pronounced firmness, even eyebrow-raising firmness in some of the leading metals. For instance, today we have seen copper and zinc move to new all-time highs. That could be technically important. And energy, generally firmer, although easing in here today. Okay, let's go back to the big picture, big theme subjects. And one of a medium-term nature is what's actually going to happen to these stock markets overall following the three-year rally. I've been talking very much along the lines of a medium-term correction. That's what I've been forecasting, with the main danger period being the second and third quarters of this year. And we are nearly there. So far, all we've seen, as I mentioned yesterday, are some of the more speculative emerging markets clearly experiencing medium-term corrections, although I would have to add Japan and South Korea to that list, and they're important because they were such dramatic global leaders among the developed country markets from really July onwards last year, when we saw the dramatic base completions. Now, whether we or not we actually get this correction, and there are a lot of people who think we won't, remains to be seen, of course. The main factor, this I've said all along, that could either delay, I'll leave it at that, delay a correction of 10% or more by the major indices, it would certainly be liquidity. And we see evidence of that liquidity in this frenzy of merger and acquisition activity, which has been very much in the headlines in recent weeks. And that M&A activity is actually increasing. I'm inclined to view that as a contrary indicator. As I've said before, why are we seeing such a frenetic pace of M&A activity right now? And that's because interest rates are moving up, and the investment banks know that this window of opportunity may well close. So it's a case of make hay while the sun actually shines. And M&A activity tends to be highest at the top of a market cycle. Now, I don't want to sound too bearish in here. I'm only looking for a medium-term correction, and I have said that a medium-term correction would provide a great buying opportunity. And I do feel that stock markets, particularly if they get a medium-term correction in the second and third quarters, would be most likely to rally pretty well, mostly through 2007 and 2008 at least. And which sectors are likely to do best? Well, I may sound like a broken record to some of you in terms of my favorite overall themes, and one of them has certainly been industrial resources. And if you've been following the sector, you know there has been a plethora of reports saying that this was a bubble, that the sector was going to collapse, that the prices of metals had raced far too high, and that people should be getting out of the sector. Now, we've heard those comments recently. We heard them 6 months ago. We heard them a year ago. We heard them 2 years ago. And so far, it's crying wolf. It hasn't happened. And I don't think that it's going to happen, although the sector could certainly be vulnerable, would certainly be vulnerable during a medium-term correction by global stock markets. But vulnerable only in the ex to the extent that I think we would also see a medium-term correction in the resources plays, and indeed they might actually fall less than some other sectors because we have already seen a bit of a correction in the resources sector. We've seen that in a number of mining shares. We've seen that in the oil sectors as well. So why do I remain so bullish in here? And basically, as you are probably very familiar in terms of this theme, it's supply and elasticity meets rising demand, and the demand for these resources is unprecedented, and I don't see that actually changing. So from time to time, supply will catch up, and from time to time, the demand will wane temporarily, but the big trend is upwards, and we see the big trend in terms of demand rising for these industrial resources being led by China, which really wasn't a factor on the horizon in terms of demand for resources a decade ago. What resources they were consuming, they were producing themselves. Now, they're this massive importer of industrial resources, as you know. And India is barely out of the starting blocks in terms of its infrastructure spending, which is going to run on for decades. And then there are other emerging countries with large populations, particularly in Asia. But there's also Brazil, and these economies are developing quite rapidly, and their demand for resources is going to be enormous. And something I've mentioned before, but every time I recall it, it strikes me as a mind-boggling statistic, and that is that basically there are just a little over 1 billion people living in so-called developed countries. And we all know, those of us who are living in those developed countries, know what we have in terms of gadgets that are using energy and the various different machines that we own, which are part and parcel of our everyday life. We take them for granted. Well, that applies to a little over 1 billion people, but there are approximately 5 billion people out there living in developed countries, and some of those developed countries are coming up very, very rapidly indeed. And all of those people who are in wealth creation mode now and aspire to improve their standard of living for themselves and their families, they want to have everything that they see in the developed countries, and that's certainly understandable. Governments are behind this drive in terms of infrastructure developments and also promoting vibrant consumer economies. And frankly, the resources that are actually available to cater to that demand, well, first they are finite, and while we're not in danger of running out of anything all that soon, and the problems of extracting this, problems of gearing up the industry, when for pretty well 20 years we had seen the mining industry, for example, in certainly a slowdown mode, very little new investment, very little development, very little training of personnel, and it can't catch up. And also, it has a bit of a disincentive in terms of catching up because they don't want to reintroduce the cyclicality that industry has always seen, especially when they can make very, very attractive profits at current levels without going out to bid too aggressively for new recruits, new equipment, new and expensive exploration drives, and so on. This is probably a familiar story for most of you, but I repeat it again because I think it's a story that's going to run for decades. So I have no intention of selling my core investment positions in leading investment grade stocks such as Rio Tinto Zinc, BHP Billiton, Inco, and I'll probably add at least Anglo American to that group. And you might have seen yesterday's item on BHP Billiton, which is selling at 10 times their earnings, future earnings, forward earnings estimates. Now, people might cynically say, well, those earnings estimates are much, much too optimistic. But the metal prices on which those estimates are being based are fairly conservative. And again, I repeat, as I said at the very beginning, we've seen copper and zinc move to new highs in here today. And some analysts are producing reports estimating that copper is going to be at half its current price a year or two from now. Well, I just don't believe it. If anything, I think the surprises will be on the upside. And of course, that doesn't mean that we don't get cyclical corrections from time to time, and indeed have just seen a smallish one. Okay, what would cause that outlook to change? Well, global recession. Are we likely to get a global recession? I don't think so. We will at some stage, but I don't see that as being immediately on the horizon. People would say, well, what about the rising interest rates? Doesn't that risk slow down? Yes, it does, but I'm very much of the view that on the first real evidence of economic slowdown in the United States, that Bernanke and the rest of the Fed will turn right around. And instead of raising short-term interest rates, they will start to cut short-term interest rates once again. And I think they'll pump into the economic system whatever money they actually need to make sure that any downturn in the economy is a soft landing. That will be the priority. They would always be able to do that, but I don't see really why we automatically have to go into a recession this year or next, despite the inverted yield curve. A bit of a that was a short-lived event anyway. A little bit of a slowdown, quite possibly, quite probability. Quite probably, rather, but I think that we will still see synchronized global economic growth. Now, as far as oil is concerned, people have been forecasting $50, $40, $30 a barrel for a very, very long time. And again, similar sort of story. It hasn't happened. Now, remember, in that quite sharp recession that we saw earlier in this decade, following the burst NASDAQ bubble and the 9/11 situation and so on, we saw a recession that hit a number of economies, and certainly the US, and yet the demand for crude oil also rose in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, and it's continued to rise. And with the global economy synchronized in terms of GDP growth, I think that demand, if anything, happens in terms of a change in the demand for oil, it won't be a decrease. It will actually be an increase in excess of what analysts are currently forecasting. So again, I'm very, very bullish of this sector. Now let's take another big theme here. Again, briefly mention the emerging markets. That's where I think we're going to get the most dramatic growth. And you see it with China growing. Okay, the statistics are official, but let's not quibble about a point or two here or there. It's growing in the 9 to 10% region, and India is in that 7 to 8% region and could well move up a notch or two from that level. Compare that with the growth that we're seeing in Europe. Compare that with the growth that we're seeing in the U.S., which is, even if you net out the hedonics, has for the most part been better with certainly the central European countries. And I prefer the emerging market to growth, and there's also a tie-in with some of the emerging market stories with the resources stories. My favorite developed country stock markets, which I'm not too keen on in the very short term, but like a lot over the longer term, are Japan and Korea. And these are currently experiencing midterm consolidations. What I'm hoping for is that we do see that second, third quarter reaction by global stock markets, a correction, a medium-term correction, which would create a phenomenal buying opportunity. And I will be buying more in terms of resources if we get this correction, more in emerging markets that will be mostly, if not entirely, in the Asian region. I'd be delighted to add to my Indian investments, for instance. Japan and Korea would also qualify, possibly, quite possibly, Vietnam, another interesting emerging market story in Asia. Okay, what about government bonds? I think the recent rises in yields that we've seen are the beginning of something significant. I have said that a secular bear market beckoned in government bonds ever since the acceleration up to the peak in June 2003. I also felt that we would see a predictably lengthy top formation development for bond prices. That's long-dated bond prices, and the mirror image of that is, of course, the inverse mirror image is the base-building phase for the long-dated government bond yields. JGBs, as is so often the case, have actually led the directional move, and depending on what you consider to be part of the base or not, there's evidence that some evidence that we've already completed the base on JGB yields. And I feel that, as I've said before, that the long-term trend is for yields to rise, and not in any dramatic fashion, I don't feel. Anytime soon. That usually comes at the latter stages of the cycle. And I feel that also the move will be quite choppy. And when governments sense that their economies are in danger of seeing a clearly slower rate of GDP growth, let alone recession, I have little doubt that they'll go in and monetize some of that debt and pump the system up again. And that will create periodic rallies in these debt markets, but rallies within an overall secular bear market evidenced by broadly ranging downward moves in the futures prices of long-dated government bonds and ranging upward trends in the yields overall. And I think this is a move that could last for at least another decade. And the factors fueling this move is, first, interest rates are coming off unrealistically low levels, and then there is the enormous supply of government bonds that's available and still coming on stream. As I've said so many times, if governments are increasing their sales of 30, 40, and even some 50-year bonds, do we really think that they would be doing that if they thought that yields were actually going to go down? Of course not. They're selling the long-term debt while they can, while yields are still comparatively low. Makes it much easier to inflate away some of the cost of that debt over the next 30, 40, or 50. years, and I believe that's exactly what we're going to see. And of course, the third factor here, as far as these bonds are concerned, is the enormous amount of money printing and credit creation that we've seen in the financial system. And that has sown the seeds for another inflationary cycle, which begins very, very gradually. They always begin very gradually. And again, the trend will not be linear, but I do expect to see in rolling waves gradual increases in the inflation rates for most countries during the better phases of economic growth, and then we'll see reactions in those inflationary pressures during some of the slowdown periods. But overall, that trend is likely to be in terms of higher inflation. So that means that I'm only really interested in playing government bonds from the short side, and I am short. Now, just going to drop back for very briefly here for a moment to the stock market cycle and say that while I haven't sold any of my investment positions, and I'm pretty sure I'm not going to sell any of my core investment positions, I leave the option open, but as I say, I'm pretty certain I'm not going to do that. I did have some hedge shorts in there, and I'm letting two of them expire today. One is the DAX short that I had, and these are my March contracts. I only had DAX or March DAX contracts, and I have a position in the March S&P. I'll let that expire. I'm letting both of those expire because they have touched new recovery highs recently, and I don't want to let those positions run against me, not with all this M&A activity going on, so I'll take the losses in those. I am retaining, for the time being at any rate, a short position in the June contracts for both the NASDAQ and the S&P. Now, getting back to the bonds, I do have short positions running across the 10-year U.S. Treasuries, the JGBs, and also the Euro bonds, and I may well add to those positions in time. Moving on to the currency markets. The dollar, I've maintained, basically peaked in November on the U.S. dollar index. I believe it peaked against the Japanese yen in December. The yen was weaker. I have felt that we would see the dollar go back down and test on the dollar index the 80 level. That's the region of its historic lows. But I felt that the more rapid phase of that decline would occur once the market was convinced that U.S. interest rates had not only peaked but were on their way back down. Now, over the shorter term, we've had sentiment wax and wane on how far U.S. short-term rates will go on the upside, and I don't think that even the Fed knows the answer to that question. I have said that I felt that they had probably made a mental note that 5% might be about right on the federal funds rate. We're currently at 4.5, but I think a lot of it depends on events. If the U.S. economy is much stronger than most people expect, then rates will go above 5. If the U.S. economy proves to be softer as the year unfolds, or if we were to see a large or a sharp stock market correction in the second and third quarters, that would cause people to worry more about possible economic implications, and that would hasten the next round of interest rate cuts. But overall, if we go right back to the beginning, when U.S. short-term rates were down at that 44-year low of 1%, we knew that couldn't last, and now that they are back up at 4.5% and still going to rise a bit further in here, the Fed has achieved in its objective of rearming the interest rate gun. So even though rates haven't peaked yet, the next big move is likely to be downwards rather than upwards. And I think currency markets are broadly reaching the same conclusion overall. And so we are seeing a weaker dollar in here. I think the dollar will range lower. I'm also hoping it will range lower because I took my profit on the euro dollar long yesterday, and I think that it's still likely to be a case of the dollar ranging lower because of the uncertainty that I've just mentioned regarding how high US short-term interest rates actually go, and given also that in most of the currency cross rates, those interest rate differentials, at least among developed country currencies, still favor the US dollar. And the trend of rate hikes still favors the US dollar. So even though currency traders are now looking beyond the peak in US interest rates, I think that we'll still get a choppy ranging move in currencies, and we've been seeing that for quite some time. I don't think that the dollar falls sharply until rates are clearly moving lower. Now, if I'm too cautious in that assessment, in other words, if the dollar falls faster than I'm expecting, it may well be because the US is helping to engineer a weaker dollar. I think it's very much in their interests to do so, and this business of getting rid of a strong currency—it's a—it's like the game of pass the parcel. And we have seen New Zealand have some success in weakening its currency, and it said it was going to do that. Australia is following the same route. The United States, following the rally that we saw in the dollar during the first 11 months of last year, is going the same route. And I don't expect enormous moves in these currency markets because, hey presto, suddenly a country finds, well, it'll be the European region will find that the euro is a bit too strong, or the Japanese will find at some point that the yen is a bit too strong. That's not the case now, but then they'll come in and make sure, they'll pass the parcel again and make sure that they weaken their own currency by cutting interest rates and particularly by increasing the supply of that currency and while jawboning it lower. Now, so we live in an environment in which no country wants a strong currency. If any currencies were going to have real strength that endured for a while, it would be some of the faster growing Asian economies in all probability, or other rapidly growing economies around the world. But those countries, more often than not, are going to step in, as I've just described, to prevent runaway gains in their currencies. Now, that is a very attractive market for precious metals, which I maintain remain in a secular bull market overall. And I never want to be, well, I seldom want to be entirely out of that sector, even though I've worried about the possibility of a cascade effect during a medium-term correction in global stock markets. But again, that's something that may happen in the second and third quarters, probably will in my view, but we don't see it in here today. And therefore, the precious metals have pushed back upwards, silver hitting a new high, and they're all pretty steady generally in here right now. I have a moderate gold futures position by my standards. I'm arguably underweight in the rest of these precious metals. As far as the energy sector is concerned, I think that we've probably seen the lows. I think we saw the low for oil. It was either was last month, got down just briefly below the $60 level for the crude oil NYMEX. I think we've probably seen the bottom in natural gas. That had the biggest fall. I think there's little doubt that we've seen the bottom in gasoline prices, which have led the way back up. I don't think that we're going to see them go racing up through the highs anytime soon, because there is still a fair amount of surplus supplies around within the system, But I do expect that to be worked off over time, and these markets will remain vulnerable to supply shocks. So I see demand going up across the boards at a steady rate, and supply, well, there isn't a great deal of spare capacity if due to political or environmental developments, it would be more likely to be political developments that production is impaired to any considerable extent. There's a report up today talking about the system not being able to handle a short down should we get it in either Iran or Nigeria. I don't think we will get that shut down, but it just does emphasize that anything goes wrong in the supply chain and we probably get a gearing up effect in terms of what actually happens to the price of oil and related contracts, which is stronger than it might otherwise be. Well, I think that's pretty much it, folks. And so another week, another interesting week in all the markets. Have an absolutely splendid weekend, and we'll look forward to here at Fuller Money to the challenge of trying to make sense of these markets on your behalf again next week and well into the future. All the best.